The two final meditations in this series reprise in a different way the meditation of Yin and Yang, Meditation 6. These two meditations offer something completely new, however. They are about living in a new energetic state, being alive and dead at the same time. Why would this be useful or valuable? Well, the reason is that you can take the knowledge that exists in your knowledge body that is not now conscious and use it in your life to make the experience of essence, which is in your experiential or physical body, more perfectly attuned to what it needs so that it can correctly fulfill the aim that it had when it came here and joined itself to physical existence. The reason we are not like this normally is that essence, in order to change, must experience the energy of surprise. Essence must proceed without knowledge in order to gain understanding of who it truly is. So we leave our knowledge behind when we come into life. However, the world is changing. There isn't enough room here or enough time here for there to be as many bodies as we need. And like so many others in so many different worlds in this universe, we have come to a point, the passage from Pisces, where the little fish is cosseted and given everything he needs in the sea of water, to Aquarius, the water carrier, who pours the water out, including the little fish, onto dry land. So how will he swim? Well, the earth is losing its ability to sustain us very, very quickly. And the result is we cannot swim anymore because there's no water around us. So what do we do? The answer is that those of us who are engaged in this work are going to be freeing ourselves from returning to the physical. We're going to ascend. And the way we're going to do that is we are going to much more quickly and efficiently engage the needs of essence through our experiential body using consciously our knowledge. There are two bodies, the experience body that is physical and the knowledge body that is not physical. There is a third body, the body of understanding, which is when the two are in balance between each other. When they are not in balance, consciousness is a pendulum that swings back and forth between knowledge and experience. Knowledge and experience. When it's in experience, we are experiencing physical life. Then it swings back into knowledge, and we experience another life, then back into the physical, and so on and on. We're going to stop the pendulum and cause it to hang between the two bodies in balance. In other words, we're going to form a triad in harmony. This means that the experiential body does not get too much knowledge from the knowledge body, but just enough. That is the essence of harmony between the two bodies. When the pendulum stops swinging, the two bodies will begin to share their attributes. That is to say, the experiential body will share its experience with the knowledge body while you are still alive, and the knowledge body will share its own vast memories with the experiential body even though you are not dead. This is being alive and dead at the same time. You must be alive to the world in a new way and dead to the world in a new way. How to do this? Well, it is quite possible, and later when we engage in the two meditations, we're going to come into contact with the real dead and the living as they truly are in essence, and we're going to learn from them what we need to know to proceed. But before we do that, we need a little bit more knowledge. That's going to involve, first, just a brief reminder about triads. We are each made up of a triad. The triad consists of the experiential body, the knowledge body, and this invisible body, and it's invisible because we are third force blind, that is the understanding body that contains the both of them and accepts fully and compassionately all of their needs and failures, as well as all of their triumphs and all that they have to give. When these two, the knowledge body and the experiential body, are in balance, then the pendulum stops swinging because the person understands himself and literally stands under his life with the consciousness partly in one body and partly in the other body. When we are like this, we don't have so much knowledge that essence cannot change, nor do we have so little knowledge that essence ever needs to make a mistake. The aim of life becomes clear. We can actually find the meaning of our own lives. Absolutely. In fact, as we do that, you will find that it's holographic, that the meaning of your life and the meaning of all life inevitably is the same thing. So what do we do to become like this? How do we do it? It's necessary to gain a little bit more knowledge first. And to do that, we're going to go to a great philosophical machine. I've written a little book about it called The Path. This extraordinary thing is the Major Arcana, the 21 face cards of the Tarot. And we're going to the last of these cards, to the highest card, because this is high work, no question about it. The 21st card. It is 3 sevens, 21. Each seven represents a full octave, a full life. The full experiential body, the full knowledge body, and the full understanding body come together in a triad. And then the card itself actually exposes the energies that are inherent in keeping this triad balanced so that we can understand how to do it. In the card, you see a figure standing in the middle of the card. It could be either a man or a woman. It has elements of both sexes, and this is quite intentional because the two sexes are also a triad. Remember from the Bible, two are better than one, and a cord of three strands is not quickly snapped. This has hanging on our wall at our home in a needlepoint since the day we were married, because this has been the essence of our relationship, and it is the essence of any relationship. So the experiential body and the knowledge body and the marriage body and the understanding body are all the same. And if you read the gospel of the marriage feast at Cana, you will find hidden in that gospel the whole story I'm telling you now in different words. In any case, let's go back to card 21 of the Tarot. The figure is in the middle holding a wand and a closed file, a little jar. This jar is the jar of physical knowledge. This is a physical experience. This is the experience of living. The wand is knowledge from the knowledge body, that is to say, from the soul's long time. You know the old song, Auld Lang Syne. It means the old long time. And what it is about is coming into contact with the ancient knowledge of the soul, going back and back and back. And please don't think in terms of my past lives. I was a farmer. I was a pharaoh, whatever. In fact, the knowledge body doesn't have any boundaries of self at all. The knowledge body contains any knowledge that you wish to address your attention to at all. Any life, any moment, anything. It's all there. And not just this planet, but all worlds are there. It is only a question of energy, of how much energy you have, how far will you ascend as to how much of the knowledge body you will participate in. That's all. They call it the Akashic Record. They call it all kinds of different things. In the book of Ecclesiastes, reflecting, or rather, Auld Lang Syne reflects the book of Ecclesiastes, and the book of Ecclesiastes refers to a man that goeth back to his long home. His long home is the long shadow of knowledge that extends back and outward forever. Oh, what a grand thing this all is. In any case, when Jesus is portrayed in the early portraits of him as holding a wand, this is the magic that he's doing. He is touching the wand of knowledge to the jar of experience and illuminating essence with knowledge. This is what the card is about, and it's what this practice that we are engaging in is about. Now, the card tells us exactly what energies are involved. There is a wreath around the adept, the balanced person in the center, and you can see how this individual is balanced if you look at a Tarot of Marseille. And don't bother with other Tarots for this. There are lots of Tarots. Nobody except who originally drew the Tarot of Marseille knew what I'm telling you now. Not one single creator of a subsequent Tarot knew these secrets. So there's no point in using the subsequent Tarots. They may be aesthetically pleasing. They may have all kinds of history connected with them. But the Tarot of Marseille, which you can get in any bookstore, is the one to use for this. Okay, and that's the one I'm speaking from. The card of the world has four beasts, one at each corner. These are the four beasts of the Sphinx, and we're going to go through exactly how these energies relate. The first beast that we're going to look at is in the lower left, the bull. The card contains the strength of the bull. You need the strength of the bull in order to do this. What is this strength precisely? It is the strength to stand firm. When the bull runs in the bull ring, he's vulnerable. But when he stands firm, the matador must come closer and dangerously closer, and the bull has his best chance of surviving the bullfight when the matador is close to those swinging horns. So the bull, and this energy is the energy of standing firm. Standing firm, and you've heard me talk about it many times in these meditations, is the ability to go back and return to your meditation and to your work again and again and again, knowing that the work is this process. The standing firm work is this process of returning again and again every time your mind wanders. And the consciousness that you are gaining is gained from the energy of coming back. It isn't necessarily gained when your meditation is working beautifully. It's gained when you are picking up the pieces and returning. This is the work of the bull. The next beast on the lower right is the lion. And you might notice, by the way, that the bull has the face also of a man. Distorted, but it is definitely a human face. All of these beasts are part of man. In any case, on the right is the lion. The courage of the lion. Now, here's how that courage works. The lion has courage when he's in his own world, because he is the king, and he knows what and who he is. So he stays where he belongs, and in that world he has mastery. He has mastery because he is strong and because he understands that world. He does not venture, for example, you will not find a lion dropping himself into a lake. He will not be courageous there. In the lake, the lion will be terrified because it's not his milieu. Our psychic milieu, where we live, is the ground on which the bull stands. The bull stands firm on the ground of courage, the courage that we have and gain by confidently knowing where we are. That's why the Tarot has been so important, because it teaches us, the major arcana teach us where we are. Now we are in card 21, the card of the world, the mysterious great card that nobody really seems to understand, but it is understood, in fact, by me and others. The third beast in the upper right corner is the eagle. The eagle soars aloft and looks down on the world. The eagle adds another dimension. The eagle adds the dimension of objectivity. You look down on your milieu, the bull holding firm, the lion with the courage to come back again and again, and the two of them working together. And the third one in this triad is the eagle. We have experience, the bull, knowledge, the lion, because it takes courage to face your knowledge. And then the third body in the triad, understanding, which is the eagle, looking down over the whole world and seeing objectivity, objectively, with clear understanding what exactly is happening and who we really are. But there's a fourth beast. We haven't spoken yet at all about this fourth level, this additional dimension, but we're going to speak about it now very, very carefully. And I'm going to integrate some quantum physical ideas when we speak about this. This is the fourth beast of the Sphinx. This is the man with intelligence. The intelligence to look down and integrate all three into a fourth and greater whole. The understanding body, the knowledge body, and the experience body meld together, are brought together by the weaving of intelligence into an even greater whole. And this is why the card of the Tarot in inner circles is called God. This is the truth of it. What you become. When Jesus said, "The kingdom of heaven is within you," he was not talking about something small. He was talking about the real kingdom. All of it, the whole kingdom, is inside you. It is inside that wreath, that body, holding the wand and the phial of the wand of knowledge and the phial of experience, is all and everything, Alpha and Omega. If you can rise high enough and ascend, and you ascend by dropping away all of these things such as sin. And it, you know, in the ancient traditions, it's always very important that we live pure lives. It's very important. But it's also terribly important to be compassionate towards ourselves, so that when we do leave the filters that are inherent in the experiential body that keep all of our knowledge out, We won't suddenly be consumed by regret, which makes us heavy, which makes it inevitable that we will stay in the earth plane and that we will come back once again to life. But wait, didn't we discuss the fact earlier that the earth isn't going to sustain all that many people in the future? So get in line if you need to come back here again. And nobody who is doing these meditations correctly needs to come back here again. We talked about a pure life. Well, there are many different ways. The warrior's way, the way of the Kabbalah, has a lot of valuable material in it. Jesus, Rabbi Hillel, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. But the simplest, strongest, and purest statement of how to do this comes from the master of the key in a few short words when he said, sin is denial of the right to thrive. Denial of the right to thrive. It makes it extremely easy to examine your life. All you have to do is look through your life and see where you are doing that to yourself and to others. What are you doing to prevent a person from thriving? You may be giving them too much. You may be enabling them. And if you do that, then you're denying them the right to thrive. The right to thrive. Thriving in this context means being all you can be as a human being. If you don't help people in the ways that they need help, that you see through your knowledge and your compassion that they need, then you're denying them the right to thrive. You have to also give up a lot of things. You have to give up caring about the material world, which oppresses us so. Jesus said, he warned, that it is more difficult for the rich man to enter the kingdom than it is for a rich man than it is for somebody to get through the eye of the needle, which was a camel to get through the eye of the needle, which was a tiny gate used at night in the walls of Jerusalem. And this gate was such that you could not pass a large group through it. You had to come through it very carefully and slowly, one by one. It was a good lesson, because this is a slow, careful work. It's why I keep admonishing you to go back and indulge yourself, take advantage of, sup on the energies that are available in the earlier meditations before you drink of this one. Then you'll get the full blessing. And I will also mention, just in passing, that the meditation with the face, the seventh meditation, it's valuable to meditate on that face. You'll find out, you'll know who that is when you meditate on that face. It will come to you. This is someone very familiar to you who is richly alive right now. So we have looked at the card of the world. We have looked at the three bodies. We know about the unnamed, extraordinary fourth body that we can become when we enter ourselves into the kingdom. Now, let's begin the process of meditating together. This friendly and extraordinary process. First, I will describe meditation with the living. Many times in these meditations, when we begin, we go to our body. We go to our physical self. We take our attention from the mind, which is whirring away with ideas, and we intentionally put it on the physical body. We engage in a simple practice of sensing. Sensing first one's left foot, one's right foot, left leg, right leg, left hand and arm, right hand and arm. Then sensing both legs, adding both arms, then taking the attention down to the base of the spine, taking it up the back into the neck and head, the face, down into the chest and stomach, and down deep inside into the dark center. Then from here, I flow outward. I let my sensation flow out to fill my whole body. And beyond that, to fill that organ that lives immediately above my skin, that electromagnetic organ that we've spoken about in earlier meditations, that is the tiny electrical field that extends outside of the body and is actually our connection to the whole universe. And in this state, if I take my mind out of my thoughts, out of my mind, keep it in my center of gravity, that second body will go into superposition. It will no longer be made up of a field. It will be hypothetical then. The electrons in it will be everywhere and anywhere at once. And so I will literally be plugged in to the universe. My quantum organ, made up of the very tiny, will be all places. And it is in this state that I will open my eyes just for a moment, experience the world around me as I see it. And now, close them all the way or part of the way again. Doesn't really matter, just to reduce the number of impressions coming in and reduce the temptation to the mind. And I will call on whoever can help me the most. Who may come into my mind, I don't know. Could be anyone in this world. A child, perhaps, an adult, someone old, new, a baby, someone still in the womb, someone in another world. And there are many, many more people in other worlds skilled in these practices and attentive to these requests than there are in our world. So you may come across practically anyone who is like you, engaged in exploring the question of being. Why have I done this? Why am I alive? What is my aim? What brought me into the physical? Why did I want this experience? Why did I need an experiential body? Now let yourself just contemplate this for a little while, and you may see in your third eye, in your mind's eye, someone there. It's quite possible. Now, we're going to do something slightly differently. We've spoken before in these meditations about the opening of the third eye. And if you cannot immediately get a sensation just above and between your eyes and your forehead. If that won't come up to you right away, take your forefinger, right forefinger, and point it toward that part of your head, and let it come closer and closer. And as it comes closer, you may feel a tickling or tingling inside your forehead, and that is the opening of the third eye. What is happening is that you're touching, in effect, your own second body with another part of your second body and creating a field that your nervous system is sensitive to. If that doesn't do it, then go ahead and actually touch skin to skin. Touch the skin of your finger to the skin of your forehead very gently, and that will do it. That will leave you a sensation in your forehead. Now, holding the sensation, open your eyes and look around you again at the room, at life around you, such as it is, a plant perhaps in the room, the wall, the chair you're in, your own hands. This is your experiential body. This is your physical body. Now, if you can, and staying in a meditative state, I want you to get up and walk away from here and go to any person who's handy, who will give you a couple of moments of their time. And be careful. Don't do this in a big office. And obviously, if you're listening to this in the car, for goodness sakes, don't do this to the poor fool sitting beside you hoping that you're driving, because you soon won't be. Put this on pause. Go and engage with another person's eyes. Ask them to let you look into their eyes for just a few moments, however long is comfortable for them. 10 seconds, 30 seconds, a minute. It doesn't matter. Then come back. Now, if you've looked in someone's eyes and have come back, whether it's a person, it could even be an animal, but it's better, much better, if it's a person. You have seen something. You have seen the fact that we carry our souls in our eyes. You know the old phrase, the eyes are the window to the soul. What happened there was that you looked through the experiential body into the knowledge body. That's why it was so extraordinary. That's why this person who you probably know well, who seems perfectly ordinary, now doesn't seem so ordinary. Because you looked through their experiential body into their knowledge body. And not only that, you saw something that is practically impossible for us to put into words, and very rarely is that ever done successfully. But it doesn't matter, because you saw their reason for being. What moved you about their eyes was the reason for being. And do you know that your own reason for being is just as visible in your eyes? There is a practice called scrying, and one of the things that is done in this practice is to take a mirror and put it under a flowing stream, and to look into the mirror as the water troubles the reflection and scatters it. And in doing so, the scryer believes that they may see something of their own secrets. But this isn't necessary. What I want you to do now is a second type of meditation. I want you to look at yourself the same way you looked at this other individual. I want you in a moment to put it on pause again and to get up and get to a mirror of some kind. It could be anywhere, any mirror, it doesn't matter. And look into your own eyes, but not for just a second. I want you to look into your own eyes for some time. Do it for a minute, say, or 2 minutes. Let yourself really get into it. But before you do that, I want you to, before you even get up from this chair, renew your sensation on your body. Take your attention back to your feet, hands, legs, arms, body, head again. Do the whole sensing exercise. Then open up your third eye. Then get up and look in the mirror. Look hard in the mirror. Do it now. Now I presume that you're back. You've taken it off pause and you're listening again. And you know something else. You know that you could not see as much in your own reflection as you saw in the eyes of another human being. But you could see a lot. And there is something now in you that cannot be put into words. But you know in a new way your reason for choosing experience. Why you are here in the physical. You probably will never be able to actually verbalize it, and that's fine, because putting it into words is taking something away from it always, because that extraordinary, inexpressible thing that you glimpsed a couple of times, it was so elusive when you were looking into your own eyes, but you did glimpse it, a new reality. There was somebody else there. Somebody else was in your eyes. This was the knowledge body, looking back out of its silence while you looked into yourself. So for the first time, the two parts of your real self have contacted one another in life. This does not happen often. It is not done. Many, many people are interested in it and hoping to do it, but their understanding of this is scattered, and they do not know how. It is like everything that is deep, that is hidden, that is deeply secret in this world. It is simple, and it is straightforward. It doesn't require any mumbo-jumbo. The secrets are all the same. The secrets by which mankind is inwardly defined are plain. They are plain secrets. Now, we're going to return to our exercise of meditating with the living. We're going to meditate with three people. First, we will return to our physical body. We will return to sensation again. Do the sensing exercise quickly. If you've been doing these meditations, you're practiced at it now. Take your attention back into your body, your feet, your hands. Do it all, because your attention is racing into your mind again and again and again. And remember, this work is not holding your attention where it should be. It is taking that unruly little horse back into the paddock again and again and again. The work is not when the horse stands where you have asked him to stand. The work is getting him to return to where he belongs. So, whenever it's hard, whenever it's difficult to concentrate, we're glad, because life and nature have given us some good work. Now, You're in your body. And you call up in your mind, in your third eye, the eyes of the person you looked at. You call up in your third eye your own eyes, and you remember how their eyes made you feel and how your own eyes made you feel. And you remember what compassion is. Compassion is the effort to find what others need the most. Look into your eyes and find there the wordless truth, the nameless need. You find there what you need the most. And you find in that other person's eyes what they need the most, and you realize something about human beings. We are all equal here. There are no masters. We are all pleading for help from one another. And you think to yourself, if only somehow I could embrace and lift up those two people and help them. Third body, the body of understanding, is the desire to help them. It is the compassion you feel for them. So there are three now. The person you looked at, your own eyes, and this other magical deep being who is the finest of you have ever known. This is meditating with the living. And now we'll take a pause and go on in just a moment to meditate with the dead. In meditating with the living, we sought experience. Now, in meditating with the dead, we seek knowledge. And how are we going to do that? Since we're not in touch directly with our own knowledge body, how are we going to push our consciousness into a place where it is afraid to go? And remember, consciousness is afraid to go into the knowledge body because knowing too much will destroy our reason for being alive. It is very, very dangerous to the experiential body to do this. As you draw consciousness out of the experiential body, it feels like death, and in a sense it is death. But how do we die to the world in a certain way? Well, let's take wing. Remember the eagle we talked about in discussing the card of the world? Well, that eagle is the movement that takes us into the knowledge body. The reason is this great and important word, objectivity. As the eagle rises above the world and looks down on it, it becomes objective. So why don't you take a little flight with me? We'll go together, you and I. Hand in hand, we will take flight, go out of our bodies. And remember, if you feel you can't really do this, it doesn't matter. Imagination is just as good. So imagine that you're doing this, even if you don't actually feel any movement out of your body, as you probably won't, because you're in your body listening to me using your ears. Later, when you do these exercises by yourself alone, yeah, you may very well move out of your body because this particular movement, we always want to go on the adventure of OBE, but nobody really knows why the experiential body might let go of the consciousness. And it might let go of the consciousness if it was able to be assured that it wouldn't learn too much, but would learn things that it needs to know and doesn't. Then it has a motive. All right, come fly with me. Imagine that you actually have wings. Angel's wings, if you wish, big, effective wings. And you spread the wings. And you rise up. You rise above your physical body. It sits below you. And as you rise up, you go higher. And if you listen to Edgar Mitchell in this weekend's Dreamland, this is the weekend of March the 1st, 2008. And if you're a subscriber to Unknown Country, you can go and listen to that Dreamland. If you're listening to this even years later, it'll be there. You listen to that Dreamland. And you listen to Edgar describing the way he felt as he was coming back from the moon. The extraordinary sense of expansiveness as he saw the earth arrayed before him in all her beauty. And I spoke earlier about the quality of that light and how it affected him. And that's what we're looking for now. As we rise up, we look down below at the room below us, at the little body sitting there listening to this. And then we rise higher. We look down at the roof of the house and higher and at the roofs around in the neighborhood, those we do know and those we don't know, the trees or roofs with which we are familiar depending upon where we live, and rise a little higher and we see the streets and the pattern of the town, and higher yet we see below us the town and the land around and the trucks and cars moving hither and thither. If it's night, we see the lights. If it's day, we see the streets. And higher still. And we are connected as if by a golden thread to our body. And yet we are not quite there, are we? Even if you're just imagining this, something has changed. And what has changed is your vision, even if you have no out-of-body sensation at all, your vision has changed. You have gotten larger. And this is the secret of entering consciousness into the knowledge body while you are still alive. This is what Edgar, without understanding what he was doing, did in that Apollo capsule. He became objective about the world. And objectivity admits of the great beauty and presence of the world. And so we rise higher. And we look down, and now we see the pattern of fields, perhaps, below us, or the desert, or wherever we happen to be, the ocean shining off in the distance. And higher still, and we see the whole continent below us. And higher still, and the curve of the earth and the golden edge of the sunlight upon the planet. And higher still, and now we see the earth as Edgar saw it, so beautiful. And we go back into sensation, our feet, our hands, legs, arms. We sense our body while imagining the light of the earth reflected upon it. And this is knowledge, this light. This new knowledge comes into our physical body, even though we are not in an Apollo capsule. We are still using the light of the earth to gain knowledge. None of this knowledge that is in the land of the dead can be admitted to language. The dead do not speak because their language is not a language of words, and you don't need to worry about trying to understand. You will understand without knowing, or rather you will know without understanding just yet. And so we go farther back, and now the earth is a little blue light, and the sun is enormous, burning, and we go farther back, and we can barely touch the light of the earth now, and the sun is small, and it is arrayed amid a myriad of stars, and we go farther back, and now we can't make it out hardly among the stars. The constellations are new. We've never seen them any before. And we are also aware of a new presence, a new intelligence, something of us, but that is not us, that seems to be weaving the whole world together. And this is the great choir of intelligent life that spreads across the whole of the universe and other universes. And we let ourselves slip along these threads, and we find ourselves slipping backwards in time. Suddenly, from this vantage point, you see yourself as a child. You remember the swing set. You remember the pool in the sunlight. Whatever memories come to you and your childhood, and then other times, more vague, you remember them too. This is your knowledge. The old long time that we spoke of before, will come back to you, haunting you, beautiful, immensely poignant. You don't have to go into detail. You needn't let your imagination run with any of it. You probably weren't Nefertiti. You probably weren't Augustus Caesar. But you were all of these beings and so many more. You can look and see immense detail of life, picking up a pencil in the year 1842, walking down a street, living on other worlds, watching a waterfall, a great crystal fountain on another world. It doesn't matter. From here, you can be everywhere and in all things. This is knowledge. Your consciousness, just briefly, had returned to the knowledge body. Now, taking that taste, we return, carrying the flame with us. Closer to the earth, the sun, we go closer yet. Now we see the sun as the biggest star in this firmament filled with stars, and closer still, we begin to see the outer planets, closer still, great Jupiter and Saturn, and closer still, past Mars and its mysteries. And some of you will feel those mysteries and know those mysteries, and know there is a truth there that escapes us now, but won't always, and closer still. Now you're back to the point where Edgar had his extraordinary experience, looking down at the light, the details of the light of the earth, and you see how profoundly you belong to the earth and to your body, and you're back in your room, in your body again. You're back in your body. But you have brought with yourself a taste of what it's like in the knowledge body. You have brought with yourself a taste of what it's like to be dead, and you will carry this now, this objectivity that will enable you to encompass the experiential body, to realize that experience is only that, that it isn't the be-all and end-all and everything, but only one part of being. And so now, when you sense yourself,
You will sense your legs, your arms, your hands, your feet the same way as before, as we have so many times before. But your second body that we talked about earlier and we've talked about in the other meditations is richly filled with a new kind of sensation. This is the sensation of your knowledge. And so we've come to the end of this time together. You will go on your own to balance your knowledge body and your experiential body, to come to understanding of who and what you are. Nobody can take you by the hand down that road. That road is yours alone to travel. But you have the equipment now. It's useful, practical, and functional in every way. This exercise is quite real, and it works. It always works. So, take it with you. Bon voyage.